if you want to leave your hometown, if you want to be surrounded by a lot of other people that you don't know and are from different backgrounds, that is the kind of person who might be more likely to develop cultural attitudes on the left. And those who don't make that choice might already be the kind of people who are on the right. But we also do have some causal evidence from people who were just on the cusp of going to college or not, from other countries and the US, that college does actually move people leftward on cultural issues. It doesn't move them leftward on economic issues. In fact, in Europe, at least, the evidence is that it moves them slightly rightward on economic issues. So it really is this kind of social and cultural dimension where we see college influence. But it also isn't just in college. People who have college degrees enter different occupations, they enter different geographic areas, they have very different social networks, and all of those things matter as well. So it turns out you're affected not just by your own educational attainment, but by those around you. So if you live in a college town, you're likely to be more liberal on cultural issues, even if you yourself did not go to college. And if you get a college degree, but you go back to, say, your hometown, where people are not mostly college educated, you're going to be influenced by them as well and not be as liberal as other people with a college degree.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and if I were to ask you, our listeners, what is the biggest division among voters in our country, either economically, demographically, regionally, you might say race, you might say whether we live in an urban or rural area, and both are good answers, but they're not correct. Our biggest divide right now is what's called the diploma divide, whether you have a college degree or not. It's been an interesting process and has had a major impact on our politics. To find out more about this, I'm here today, joined today by the co-author of a very excellent book that's come out, and his name is Matt Grossman. He is the director of the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research, and a professor of political science at Michigan State University, a Midwesterner. He's a senior fellow at the Niskanen Center. I've had some other guests from the Niskanen Center on, and they do important work. With David Hopkins, he's the author of a book called Polarized Degrees of the Diploma Divide and the Culture War Transformed American Politics. Very important and timely book. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, okay. I think based on my reading of this, you provide some information on some myths that a lot of people in politics assume. But let's start out. When did this really start, this diploma divide? I really like the historical angle you give on this. But when did this start becoming a major division in how we choose who we vote for?
Well, it depends which part you are describing. Democrats have lost support among white voters without college degrees starting in the 1970s. But the trend toward white voters with college degrees moving overwhelmingly towards the Democrats is much more recent, really, from the 2000s and especially in the 2016 election and afterwards. Now, we try to tell a story about the relationship between that and the rise in social and cultural issues relative to economic issues. So it turns out it was always the case that more educated people had more liberal opinions on issues like abortion and gun control and in wider views of diversity and social change. It's just that when those views came to predominate our politics, they increasingly divide the parties.
I ask that because there's a thought that this divide began with Donald Trump. And I thought you laid out how that really isn't the case. This was in the works prior to his coming on the political scene in 15.
It was, and one sign that it can't just be Trump is that it's happening really all over the rich world. That is, voters are moving to the left if they have college degrees and or are more educated or are more elite educated, and they're moving to the right if they have the lowest levels of education in their societies. The difference in the U.S. is that in other countries you have places to go beyond the two parties. So you might have a Green Party or a left party for college degree holders to go to, and you might have a anti-immigration populist party that doesn't represent business or economic conservatism to go to voters without college degrees. But in the United States, there's only two options. And so what's really happened is kind of a remaking of our two major parties in the image of what would be third parties elsewhere.
What was it? Were there specific candidates, issues that caused this realignment along educational attainment grounds? I mean, I grew up in a blue collar family, Democratic family, got a college degree. I know growing up, it just didn't seem to be that clear of a divide. In fact, a lot of people with degrees voted Republicans. But what was it that was there a specific event, person, or whatever that caused this?
So the one thing that is confusing in kind of figuring this out is the relationship between education and income. High levels of education are associated with high levels of income, but high income used to move people towards the Republican Party, and low income used to move people towards the Democratic Party. And if you separate them, you can still see some sort of a relationship. In other words, it's the voters with high education but low income, we'll call them graduate students, who have moved to the left most quickly. And it's the voters with high income but low education that have moved towards the right most quickly. So it used to be true that higher education voters voted Republican, but it wasn't because of education. It was because of income. And as education has increasingly divided the parties, income has divided the parties less than it used to. And all of that is really associated with whether economic or cultural issues are at the top of the spectrum. So both internationally, countries that have political systems that are still divided more by economic issues than by cultural issues still don't have much of an education divide compared to others. Individual campaigns where, or election cycles where we talk more about economics, like in 2012, both presidential candidates, Romney and Obama, both talked more about economics. And thus, we saw less of an education divide between the voters. So it's really when we move to talking more about cultural issues relative to economic issues that we get that switch from the income divide to the education divide.
I thought it was interesting how you traced how as the number of people with college degrees increased in the United States, and you provided some data on that going back to the 60s or 70s, I think. Share with our listeners how people, it's not, I guess it's just not automatic that if you got a college degree, then you're going to be left on cultural issues. But how did that kind of develop that way to have that sort of outcome over the last 30, 40 years?
Well, the relationship has grown stronger, but it was always there. Part of it is not causal. That is, part of it is about the kinds of people who want to go to college. If you want to leave your hometown, if you want to be surrounded by a lot of other people that you don't know and are from different backgrounds, that is the kind of person who might be more likely to develop cultural attitudes on the left. And those who don't make that choice might already be the kind of people who are on the right. But we also do have some causal evidence from people who were just on the cusp of going to college or not from other countries and the U.S. That college does actually move people leftward on cultural issues. It doesn't move them leftward on economic issues. In fact, in Europe, at least, the evidence is that it moves them slightly rightward on economic issues. So it really is this kind of social and cultural dimension where we see college influence. But it also isn't just in college. People people who have college degrees enter different occupations. They enter different geographic areas. They have very different social networks, and all of those things matter as well. So it turns out you're affected not just by your own educational attainment, but by those around you. So if you live in a college town, you're likely to be more liberal on cultural issues, even if you yourself did not go to college. And if you get a college degree, but you go back to, say, your hometown, where people are not mostly college educated, you're going to be influenced by them as well and not be as liberal as other people with a college degree. But it also matters how these issues have kind of developed. That is, you know, it was always the case that people with college degrees were more liberal on race and gender and LGBT issues, for example. But those, we have moved culturally leftward on those issues over time. And we have also moved, as you mentioned, from having a very small proportion of the population having college degrees in the 50s or 60s to now more than that portion having graduate degrees. So we have a big educational increase at the time that we're increasing, moving leftward on these issues like race, gender, and gay rights. And that's really separated those people with the most educational attainment from those with the least.
Interesting. You talked in the book about people sometimes, and we've had other guests talk about this, adapt their own views to what the party leaders are saying. And I think you're seeing that to some degree on, well, all kinds of issues, especially right now with what's going on. But if you could talk about that, I think that's an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, so certainly people do adapt their views to those of the parties, especially on low salience issues or new issues. Or issues where you might not be able to easily kind of connect it to the ideological spectrum. So foreign policy towards specific countries is a good example where, you know, it tends to just go with who's in power, do I like them or not, and what's their policy, rather than people kind of having longstanding views of, you know, our particular policies toward lots of different foreign nations. But I do think sometimes we can overstate that, and we can say, well, you know, Donald Trump talked this way and moved Americans in this direction. To some extent, that's true. You know, it didn't come out of nowhere. There were lots of people who had anti-immigration views, anti-trade views, just didn't seem to have a home in either political party for a long time, who have now moved themselves firmly in the Republican camp and then have adopted some other Republican views. But that doesn't mean that, you know, they were just following the leader. They moved into the Republican Party because of those issue positions and cultural views that they held before.
I'm curious, Matt. I want to take a minute and ask, how did you come to zero in on this topic to write about? I mean, it's been a topic that on my show I've explored many different times, but how did you come to zero in on this, you and David, on this specific topic? Because boy, it's really timely, and the book is well researched, and I heartily recommend it to folks that want to try to understand this better.
Dave Hopkins and I wrote a previous book called Asymmetric Politics, which is about the big differences between the political parties. And since then, it came out in 2016. And since then, people have been asking us what's changed or how much has changed. And so we think things have changed, but that the parties haven't necessarily become any more like one another. And so we wanted to explore those changes. And then the second part that motivated this is our own experience. We're college professors at a time when that has become a very politicized identity, in which lots of real culturally liberal moves are taking place within universities, and in which there is a conservative backlash against institutions of higher education. And my institute kind of works at the intersection of the university and state government. So I see, you know, every day when the perceptions of the university are changing from the political system and how the university is expressing itself in politics. And so we're interested in those institutional changes just as much as the voter changes.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest today Matt Grossman, who's co-author of an important new book out called Polarized Degrees, How the Diploma Divide and the Culture War Transformed American Politics. Very timely. And again, as I started out, this is the biggest dividing line right now in American politics, whether you've got a college degree or not. And that is kind of the accepted definition of working class versus non-working class. There's controversy about that, different opinions. We're not getting into that today. But I think this book offers a lot of great information on helping us to understand this, when it started, how it came about, what impact it's having. And there is a local mention in your book, specifically Dave Losack in the first district in Iowa. And this was part of how the diploma divide and culture war impacts the two parties. Could you talk about that specifically in the reference to Iowa's first district too?
Yeah, well, I'm originally from Missouri, and in northern Missouri, you know, used to be represented by Democrats as well, but Democrats who, for example, were known for armed services, being pro-life, and being pro-gun. And of course, Iowa had some people who didn't match the current party spectrums as well. And, you know, I think it's a good, this is a sort of necessary to explain the geographic change in American politics, because there weren't, you know, big changes in economic views of people in Iowa and Missouri over that period. There wasn't, you know, a huge shift in the party's positions on economic policy issues. What there was is a big increase in the role of social and cultural issues, and people prioritizing those issues over maybe economic policy views or other or traditional partisan connections in voting for candidates. And now the parties aren't really putting forward people who don't match the party's national brands on these issues. And so the states and the congressional districts have really sorted based on opinions on cultural issues. And that happened certainly in Iowa and Missouri.
This seems like it's going to work to the benefit in the long run of Republicans, because there are more people without degrees than those with. And because of what you described as sorting, Democrats seem to be more packed in the urban areas. Is that a fair assumption, or are there advantages for Democrats there that are going to evolve here in the future to help balance things out?
Well, first, the direction is towards more educational attainment and towards more liberal cultural views in the public over the long term. So the Democrats have to kind of keep losing people at the same rate they have been losing people who are at the lower ends of those spectrums if they are actually going to lose ground. If they just maintain support from their existing constituencies and we just get a more educated and more diverse country, then that would be a good for Democrats. But what we have a tendency to do is, when we move policy in a culturally liberal direction, we tend not to be satisfied with a level or pace of movement. And so Democrats keep pushing for further change in those areas. And that is what kind of tends to move the public to not go along with the cultural liberalism of the Democrats.
It's been how many years since Bill Clinton's famous campaign theme of "it's the economy, stupid," where the economy was the most important issue. Now what you're saying is, and I you know, you've mentioned several times here the relationship between economics and culture. It just seems like and I know people in Democratic campaigns who are saying we need to just talk about economic issues and not really reference the cultural issues. Is that the way to go about this, to try to win some of these tougher districts like Iowa 1 that you mentioned in the book?
Well, overall, there is going to be a relationship between the education divide and the extent to which the candidates prioritize culture or economics. There's also going to be a lessening of the education divide if we have, say, a Democratic candidate who doesn't culturally look like most Democratic candidates who kind of performs a cultural conservatism, and we see that as a strategy by Democratic candidates. But I'm not sure it's going to get them that far. far. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, moving 1 or 2 points relative to the underlying presidential vote, then those kinds of strategies might matter. But we're talking about elections that are extremely closely correlated between the votes for the president and votes for all of these down ballot offices, that it's just hard to break out from the image of the national party. So unless the national party image changes, it's hard for those candidates to differentiate themselves. The other big pattern is what we call thermostatic politics, which just means that people move against the party in power. So it really could be that Democrats don't need to do much in 2026. All they need to do is rely on the backlash against the Trump administration, against the Republicans moving too far, even on social and cultural issues. So, you know, opinions on immigration are actually currently moving leftward because policy is moving quite rightward quite quickly. So that also means that there's kind of a tendency for Democrats to think, well, you know, we should revise our positions or not talk about social and cultural issues. But they're doing that at the same time when maybe there's an opportunity because policy is moving quite far, you know, in a culturally conservative direction. So that's sort of the trade-off that Democratic candidates face.
I made a note here in one of the final chapters, just culture is politics, politics is culture, and everything is politics. And you bring this up in the context of just movies. I mean, whether you wore a mask, everything is political right now. And this is part of how cultures, impacted our politics so much. I guess my question is, this is maybe an unfair question to put you on the spot. Do you think this is going to break at some time, or is this just for what you're seeing in our modern politics, this is just going to be the way it is for the foreseeable future?
Well, I certainly think trends toward talking more about culture and politics and everything being politicized in our culture are unlikely to run aground anytime soon. We have political actors who are egging them on. We have big changes in media. We haven't talked about that as much, but there is evidence that, for example, media does better when they talk more about cultural issues relative to economic issues, that people don't necessarily want to sit in for long economic discussions, but they're happy to do so for culture war discussions. And of course, our media has been transformed so that you really have an opportunity to tune out of politics altogether if you want, or to tune in to only the most sort of salacious cultural details that you're interested in. And so I think both of those trends are continuing to move in the same direction. That doesn't necessarily, I wouldn't equate that with, left-right trends in American politics. I don't think they necessarily have a clear direction. Instead, what we tend to get is sort of whiplash based on backlashes against the incumbent party.
You took a look at Trump's first term, and we've got several minutes left here, but I wanted to ask you, since Trump was elected in your book, cuts off before his election in 2024. There's definitely been aggressive actions taken towards cultural institutions. Is this an effort? Well, obviously it is, but I think this is an outgrowth of what you wrote about in his first term. They didn't seem as successful. Now they're doing so.
Absolutely. So first of all, we definitely think this is an important outgrowth of the diploma divide that Republicans really are going after social and cultural institutions that are perceived and are disproportionately liberal and have been moving in culturally liberal directions. As you said, they did so not very effectively during the first Trump administration and are doing so much more effectively now through a combination of actual business ventures that are taking control of media apparatus, through regulatory threats, threats to remove government funding, all kinds of tools running the gamut that have much more successfully seen action from those same social and cultural institutions. Now, is that going to work in the long term? I'm not sure. First of all, you have that thermostatic dynamic so that people's actually feelings about universities are getting more positive now in the wake of them being attacked. And the same thing, you know, happens at other social and cultural institutions as well. Second, you know, you still have the people who work for these institutions being quite culturally liberal and highly educated. That's a hard trend for conservatives to reverse. So it's not clear that they're going to work in the long term, though certainly in the short term, they've been much more effective in waging the culture war and doing it very explicitly on the basis of this divide over educational attainment and the people in these cultural institutions being attacked because they are representing the left side in the culture war.
The challenge of an interview like this is the book has so many important points, and I try to touch on them all. I want to leave this open for you. I've got 2 minutes here. Something that maybe I didn't touch on, missed, that you think is important for our listeners to know about this book.
I think we really try to tell this kind of institutional story in a way that hopefully conservatives will recognize as the part of their critique that it's not a fiction that these social and cultural institutions in the media, in universities, in Hollywood were all moving leftward on social and cultural issues, especially race and gender, but not exclusively. And that was kind of at the time causing a bit of a backlash. But I think we sort of tried to predict that this was really going to move into full gear in the future as Republicans recognized that this was the battle that they wanted to take on in a full-throated way. And that's really what's happened in the second Trump administration. And I think we, if not predicted that, tried to sort of lay the groundwork for why that would be the target and, you know, what happened in the interim. I don't know, as I said, if we're really going to get back to, say, pre-2015 versions of those institutions. So even if a Republican succeed in pushing back, it doesn't necessarily mean that the long-term trajectory won't still be in a culturally liberal direction. But certainly this is the biggest kind of institutional challenge it has faced.
That's an important point. I think I hear from people all the time, but I wish it could go back the way it was. I don't see that for quite a while. And that's a good point you made there, Matt. I just want to add one more thing. And you mentioned it too. This book doesn't come with an agenda on either side. It's written objectively. And I like that. I get tired of all the screeds from left and right anymore that come out. I think you and David did an excellent job of just presenting this information in an objective way to find, a clearer understanding of what's going on. So I salute you for that. And again, for our listeners, this book is called Polarized Degrees, How the Diploma Divide and the Culture War Transformed American Politics. This is the biggest change we've had, this realignment in years. And so this is a very important book. Matt, thank you again so much for taking the time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.